Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast. It's episode 358, and it's part two of episode 358. It's part two of my conversation with Kay Tempest and Polar Bear. If you've not heard part one yet, go and listen to it, because both of these were just... The whole conversation was so much fun to have and so revealing. It's why I love having mates who I'm constantly inspired by and learning from. And Kay and Polar are two of the prime examples of that. So, yeah, part one's already available. So go and if you've somehow stumbled upon part two, go and check that out. And check out everything from Kay and Polar. Kay's had a new book out recently in October. New music in recent times. There's more to come, as we discuss. And Polar's got a load of books that you can check out immediately. So yeah, check them all out. If you want more stuff, as I've mentioned before, I'm going to try and keep this intro brief, but I've done the 12 days of Pipmas over at patreon.com/scroobiouspip. Essentially, you can get 12 different full video versions of these podcasts, all for $1. Or more. You can pay more if you want. And also, you can head to speechdevelopmentrecords.com to get loads of good merch. Christmas is the time for this kind of thing, and we've got loads of wintery stuff there. So check that out. But I won't ramble on anymore. And this is part two. I've not put one out on a Friday in ages. This is part two of Christmas Drinks with Kay Tempest and Polar Bear. It's a mad one, but speaking of the city, you've had a big year in your life as well, Paula, because you've gone home.
Yeah,
returning hero.
Not quite, man. Just people, I've not still not told anyone.
Really?
But
would you like me to not talk about this? I mean, we can swerve this if you'd like.
No, we're all right, man. We're all right. I'm not hiding it. Yeah. It's more just like they didn't want to get any bells and whistles or nothing, really. Yeah. I think it's more just...
You need a plaque.
So where we are is like the opposite side of Brom to where I grew up.
Yeah.
It's greener. So it kind of feels like I've not brought anybody back. We're all kind of discovering it and figuring it out for the first time together, which is kind of really lovely. So it's like, I don't feel like I'm home as such. Like home was the flat, home is the house, home is just where we kind of hang out. So it's more just space that's kind of been the big shift in the sense of we were always upstairs. We spent 7 years in a place with no sofa because the bedroom was the thing. Then we spent 7 years in a place with the sofa but no garden. And now we've got a couple sofas and a garden, man. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's a mad one. It's a mad one because it's as cliche as you'd imagine. Like, I'm just enjoying the space, and we're all enjoying the space, and we're all enjoying a sense of... It's funny because, like, we were having a conversation over dinner the other day, and our oldest, I was saying, like, right, does it feel that different to London? And he's like, oh, no, we still live in London. We're just 100 miles away. So it's just that thing of, in his mind, it's all just like, it's not...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, and part of that might be, you know, the limited way you can actually physically interact with people and how that had been over the course of this since March or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's just, they're just a couple real philosophical young dudes who just like, right, yeah, man. It's like, it is, they just roll with it. They're so much stronger in that sense than I ever was at that age. And like, there's such little pretense in them. That it's just like, well, this feels like basically like a celebration rather than like that big a shift. It's just like...
That's amazing. That's a tribute to you two, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, thank you. But I mean, like, I think it's such a, at this point, it's not even like a band. It ain't like a band with like a front man and woman and whatever. It's like, it's a band. It's like the Four Tops, man. We're all just doing this. And then for my bit of the thing, I come forward, then they come. Do you know what I mean? It's not
I
ain't even Quincy Jones in it. I'm not really leading it.
Yeah.
I'm just providing the food.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's like it just kind of sorts itself because our whole thing has always just been the absence of pressure. And I think relating it to like now in the movement, now there is a real genuine physical sense of less pressure, because even though I've always been like a kind of paddling rather than fully swimming in what, I don't want to say London, but like what the kind of, you know, people say, I don't know, industry feels like a weird word, but like, do you know what I mean? Like,
no, no, yeah.
I've always like done my thing and then kind of got out because it's always been like part of something.
Yeah.
And this now, and that's always been fine. And now it feels like, the walls and the space where I am represents the way it fits the way that we've kind of been living anyway. Do you know what I mean? It just suits it. Yeah, it feels really nice. It's really weird because you end up over time giving the impression that you're anti something, or like, you know, the disgruntled, everything's rose tinted about back in Brom, or like, oh, fuck London. And it was never that, really.
Yeah.
I came for a person, and it's like over time I missed a sense of just caring about the space. Mm. It always felt like I was borrowing space and borrowing time and borrowing everything else. And now here, the balance is getting the balance between too much space where you feel like you are feeling like redundant or feeling like you are stopping or not charged. But now, luckily, the stage of life that I'm at, it's just a daily, it's just jokes, man. It's just jokes, like daily things, conversations happening that are sparking, that are thinking. And I'm thinking things with a freedom that, yeah, it's just really, for the first, I can't lie, from March, was it March when it started?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for the first like four or five months, I couldn't do anything. I was trying, really trying. I had stuff to do, man. I had deadlines and shit. I was trying to do it.
Yeah.
I remember texting you a couple of times, and going like, oh, we're writing. And you'd go, I've seen you on the social media, so I know you're supposed to be writing now because you're not doing this. Like, oh, you're doing this instead.
As soon as he's posting a lot, I'm like, he's meant
to be writing. And it's true. It's true, right?
Because you've never been one who like loves social media in general. It's not like it's your spot. It's almost there reluctantly, and then it's like, all right.
It's a real stopgap, and it's a real like that immediate fix of just interaction, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you know, there's no one. I'm fortunate, man. There's no one bothering me.
Mm.
So I've always been like next to trouble. So it's like, it's one of them things where it's like, and sometimes that is not a nice feeling at all, because you feel like you are redundant, or that there is a weird relationship out. But what it means is, it means that it's kind of on me. So like when I say like, you know, if this stops, I'll go and paint walls. I'm not saying that to kind of like make myself feel better. It's just a genuine truth.
Yeah.
So it's just like so it's really interesting to hear, because talking about the energy before a performance or the energy of it, right? I was always kind of mesmerised by it. And it's why it's funny thinking about that tour.
Yeah.
You know, the three of us in a van or whatever going round, because there's so many levels to it, because on one level, I think we have a lot in common. And on another level, there's disparity between us in the sense of it, not in terms of like, but just in terms of like a what it is and what it's for and how we manage it.
Yeah.
So I found that really fascinating, because it felt like the bits that genuinely mattered, there was a commonality in that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's like this. I reckon that there were times in that time when I would be looking at, for example, when you're playing loads of festivals and stuff, and you rock up, you're not really meant to be there. You've got nothing. You're not in a proper stage. And I would see all these tour buses, and I'd just be like, I want that. I want those big stages. But I knew that you weren't having those feelings. You weren't like,
no.
I want to be up there. I want to be like. And I know exactly what you mean. It's like the desire for it is different.
Yeah, exactly. But also what's nice is when it's like Pip was saying at the beginning, like you being you, when you're you, there are enough people who would have them feelings that you were having, or the ones that I'm having, and they would deny them in either way.
Yeah.
And that was always when the friction happened, because, you know, real recognise real, innit? So it's like whatever you're into, you're into you what you're into. Yeah. If you're into something and I'm into something, we can just chill. We can vibe off each other and create some stuff actually as well.
Interesting that you're saying the different versions of each of us outlook-wise, because, again, I was always comfortable with the fact that I've got a boringly kind of business mind about things. Like, outside of the creating part, I'm all over this. But after that, I've like, I know where I'm going to have my merch, I know how I'm going to promote it, like all that side of it. I get my mind going on it. And artists,
dude, you were a well-oiled machine. It was like a lesson. Really
that shit. Yeah, it was amazing.
Artists can be proper protective of that, though. They can be proper like, well, no, it's about the art. I'm like, no, I'm fine by saying, look, if I can sell some merch as well, it means I can tour for longer and I can do more and I can like reduce a ticket prices and stuff like that. I always knew like our booking agent, we always had it on him to keep our ticket prices as low as we can. Because it's like, right, we'll cover it elsewhere. Oh, look at this.
There is. He just came to say hello.
Hello, Murphy.
Absolute beauty.
Sorry to interrupt there, Pip.
But yeah, no. And again, I remember on that tour, it was like, because we had Soundman Jim as our driver and doing our sound, the man, the myth, the legend. But I'd pretty much tour managed all of it. I'd booked all the gigs. I'd done all the artwork. And then,
yeah, it was your show, man.
And we had fuck all to load in, but I brought like the back of the van load of merch because I'm like, all right, I'm going to have some merch on, so I'm going to sell some shit. But it's still...
Yeah, and you were always like straight down after the show. It was amazing to see. Like straight down the merch, and you'd be there till every single person had got whether they wanted a photograph or something signed or to buy something. You were just there.
Yeah.
I was like... I'd never seen that before.
And buying the gifts. Remember, like, buying the gifts from charity shops and shit. Like,
I'd forgotten about this.
Such a lovely touch.
I'd forgotten about this and someone posted about it. But, yeah, I'd go out each day after we'd sound checked or whatever and I'd go to a charity shop and buy a load of just stuff and hide it around the venue, but sign it. So, like, a guy has got a Charlie Sheen autobiography signed by Scroobius Piff. Patrick Swayze one of them tweeted me about it, signed by me. But that was it. I always saw these things as a whole. And the easiest example I can give on that was going to see Sage Francis. And I remember being, the first time I saw him, I remember being blown away. But I also remember the clearest memory was buying a record off him on the merch table afterwards. Because that was personal. And that meant the world. That was just me and him in that moment.
Yeah.
So for me, all of that was always part of a show. I've not finished my... responsibility as such until
that's
everyone's out of the venue
hear, man.
Rather that's than I've done the bit on stage and we're gone now. And even with with particularly like tours all along, I'd try and structure the show. And again, that's what that tour was about. I was like, these are two of my favourite people, but performers as well. So it's like, I know that from the start of the show, we're going to have good stuff. So yeah, it's that kind of being on that whole time, I guess.
But it's fun to think about that because for me, it's always just, it's like a string of moments.
Yeah.
Like scattered, not even a string, because string makes it sound quite organised. It's like a scattered, when I think about it, and when you posted that picture and I started, the flyer, and I started thinking, I remember the time, I don't know what room it was before we were doing it, but me and you were just doing the most ridiculous, jokey freestyle thing about biscuits or some shit somewhere. I don't know where it was. I remembered that. I had a flash of a thought with myself or you spinning on my back. And I was like, was that me or was that you?
It was you, mate.
Yeah, I know that now because it's become
clear. I swear both of them were in Bristol. I'm sure it was in Bristol when dates in for the wheels to start to come off slightly. Because the first couple of dates, it was like, well, one night Polo will go first, the next night Kay will go first. Yeah. And by Bristol, you're like, let's just go up together. And we'd all done more drinking pre that. And because we'd relaxed into the tour a little bit, and I'm sure that was the one where it was just like, well, that it's now just going to be one long support set as such, where you guys are just going like, back and forth. You don't know, you've not planned it.
It's that thing, though, isn't it, man? It's that thing. It's like, what are you gathering? What are you filling yourself up with? And I think you can have a wicked set. This is what I was thinking about anyway. I remember getting in the van the afternoon, going, right, why am I doing this? Like, why am I getting in the van now when people are at home or whatever? Yeah. And I was just like, right, I think it's because I like these people and like something might happen that feels like it validates that kind of choice. And it's like, so to not maximise what that was, knowing as well, don't get me wrong, the proviso that it was so, you had absolutely everything taken care of, lad. So it weren't like you were going, oh, what are we doing? No, we knew, so there was a freedom in it.
Yeah.
So I took it as a chance to be like, right, let's hang out, but then let's translate that. And that's what it felt like. It felt like, so it means, you know, like you're saying, it's not you, you kind of go through, but is there something in the idea of if it's with somebody else actually on the stage, is that the same? Is that magnified? Is that, I don't know what that is, because I've never had a band, eh? I've never been in a band.
Yeah.
Not in terms of on stage. I've always been with crew, but never performed with a band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's always been something that I've always been really fascinated by. And kind
but
of
this is, it's one thing to play with musicians, and then what happens musically, the connection between people and where it goes, it's incredible. Like, the collaborative thing is incredible, but it's a whole nother thing to have that with another lyricist.
Yeah,
and to just be the two of us, like, just
I remember
whatever.
Listening. Yeah, I remember exactly. listening.
And then just and saying whatever listen. Whatever poem comes to mind off the back of the last poem.
That's what
and
I loved. Makes, that's yeah, what I loved about it. Because as an individual performer, you get into your, here's the kind of rough order. I know that yeah. if I need to pick them up, I'll go to this. And then after that, I can drop down and get the intimacy with this one. That was all out the window with that, because you're literally just a word. Like, Kay will be doing a piece, and a word in her piece will make Pola go, oh, I'll do
but
this one
respect,
next.
But it's respect,
isn't it? Like, not even the whole tone or the whole thing. It's just, oh, man, that's reminding me of this piece.
Yeah, yeah. But it's respect that comes from a trust, right, yeah. which I think, yeah. at least from my own perspective, and this is with the utmost respect to anybody else that I've shared things with, it's like, it's rare for me. It's rare for me I can't believe this is not going to sound good, but like to be with someone who's doing the same thing yeah. and not feel like either I am like helping or I am like learning in that direction. Do you know what I mean? Like, but to yeah. do both.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Same,
but
to do both
there's
at the same
like
time.
An equality of like intention,
exactly.
or like something like the influences are similar, or the
completely. And it's almost like an acknowledgement of like, right, this person, what they are doing, only they can do like this to this, and you're like, right, holy shit, that's pretty much the most attractive thing in the world, because that's
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
That's magic. So like, if I'm with magic, oh, I can not just stand, we can actually be magic, and we can actually, do you know what I mean? You think
yeah,
about,
yeah, yeah.
I remember the day, so like, Pip, like, Kay and I made a track together, right? And I thought about this the other day, actually, right? I came to what was a basically metal container. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Right, and we sat in a metal container with Ferry
yeah.
and Archie, right?
Yeah.
In the dark.
That was our studio.
Yeah, with the beginning of a loop. It weren't no studio, man.
That's what we had.
But like, with the beginning of a loop, that they were tweaking, and we just sat and we went bam, bam. And we'd all, you've rhymed and I've been rhyming for time, so we've done that with mates. We didn't know each other that well.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that led to that, led to that, led to that, and you go, oh, we don't know what that is. And I left going, I don't even know what that was, really. And then I listened to it the other day, right?
Yeah.
It's literally, it's that game, it's consequences when you fold the paper over.
Yeah.
In the most genuine way, but it refers back to itself in the way that, I guess what I mean is I surprised myself with how much I was tuned in because I wasn't used to doing it.
Are you, so in your life now, you're writing books, you're writing novels, and you're writing like stories, but you're it's not collaborative, like writing books, you're alone. And I find that to be so... It's so demanding, and it's the one thing that I find it's really rewarding for all of the same reasons that it's really scary and challenging. And some days it's so hard for me to sit down and get into it. If I've got a long story to write, if I'm trying to work on a novel, it's the hardest thing in the world for me to get galvanized to get started because it's so big and there's so much to do. And it's not like you're just in a room with someone sparking and seeing what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, have you got tricks, basically? Have you got any advice of how to keep it feeling like connective and surprising, even when it's just you up against the page?
Right. This is going to sound probably pretentious or whatever. What I do is I create people that I'm in love with, that I'm genuinely in love with. So it doesn't feel like I'm on my own. And it feels like, even if they're doing things that I don't necessarily agree with, it's like, I can't start until I feel like I've got to know somebody. And it's interesting, man, because I've been trying to document, I'm starting to write a new story at the minute. And I'm trying to document the process of doing it. But I want to do it myself, but I've been filming myself doing it because I know that does something to me as well when I'm getting my ideas out. I'm just playing at this point because this is like not my first time around the block. So it's like, I want to see how I get to do it. But something I've landed on is that sense of, I just want to spread joy. Basically, I want to, everything that I write is a celebration of something, whether that be a memory, whether that be a relationship, whether that be somebody going through or finding something. So it's like, create people drawing from bits, but also like fabricating stuff that I'm not just that I like or I'm interested in, that I'm basically in love with. Yeah. And so it's like, I feel like I'm dancing with somebody who is there and I'm trying to push or I'm trying to, be kind to you, but also like a little bit of an arse and seeing what they would do if this happened. But really, in essence, what I'm doing is giving them a chance to prove and show themselves as to why they're worth loving and why I love them.
Yeah.
And then, and it's like, it's how, it's what I want to be out in the world. You know what I mean? It's like, so the reason that I like, we've all been in these, I know we have, this is why this is fun, because I can talk to you and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We've all been in these situations, and whether it's, and because Pip, you're writing for the screen all the time as well, man, you have been for time.
Yeah.
It's like, you've been in them conversations whereby, you know, someone's excited by the energy of you or a voice that they've seen in some of your work or whatever. But in essence, they want you to do a thing that they already know exists.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, right, I could do that. And then my brain goes, my brain next morning goes, I know someone who will do that.
Yeah.
And as soon as I do that, I check out. And then I go and talk to somebody else and they're like, you idiot. You could have just done that. You would have been this, this, this. And I'm like, no, it's not a choice.
Yeah.
Like, they open the door of the train. Like, we're on a train. They open, when they told me, they opened the door and I looked outside and it was flipping, I don't know, Wonka's Palace, or it was like a gorgeous river. Yeah. I couldn't not jump off that at that point. I couldn't stay on the train knowing it's gorgeous out there and this is crap.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, do you genuinely believe that everything that is coming out is yours, is like what is what you want? And I think there's interesting in that, because we all mess with different forms, and you're performing in a sense of you are becoming characters and getting into that.
Yeah, yeah.
The play of that, I always find gorgeous. And having worked with actors and written for actors and stuff,
yeah,
I find that so magical. Like, do you get home burning with ideas to write, or do you just enjoy that? And just, does it feel separate? Do you have to have a certain time when you're doing it? If you're quite organized,
it's a bit of the two. I mean, on the writing front, I think you're completely right, and it's that, I think the thing you then have to train yourself to do is to be open to feedback. Because again, it's easy to go to every bit of feedback and go, well, that's not my voice, that's not how I would have done it. And in reality, they've given a good note. Do you know what I mean? They've given a good note or direction that could help, that you can, that can push your voice in an even better direction, can get more out of your voice. They've given a good bit of voice training.
Yeah, yeah, completely. I guess what I mean before. I don't mean when there's a thing to share.
I completely agree.
Do you know what I mean?
I've suffered before in the past because I've had that exact outlook in the start. And then I had a big project I'd written and I handed it in and the feedback came back and I was like, well, they don't want my book. They want someone else's and all that. And then I've told this, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but a year later they came back and said, have you got any developments on that? Because it was really good. And I went back and reread the feedback and it was absolutely fine. It was really good notes, but I wasn't in a place to accept them. Yeah, I was in a place to go, well, that's not me. What they want isn't me. So I'll go over here and do other stuff.
See, the thing is,
that's something I've had to learn, kind of thing.
Yeah, but I've been in a relationship with a dramaturg and script developer for 20 years, man. So it's like, I'm used to someone going, what the fuck's that? That's like, what are you saying here? I don't believe you. This is bollocks. Yeah. I've had that for like half my life, right? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, to me, the joke of it is, that part of it is probably the most exciting to me.
Yeah.
It's just finding the people that you respect.
Yeah.
To get that from. And I thought at this point I would have met more, because it turns out that it's like, and obviously this is just personal taste and it's also chemistry and it's also, you know, the laws of attraction between individuals as well. But like, yeah, not everyone who gets to make a decision on something should.
You know, but it's tough though. It's tough to know where to put your trust. If somebody is in a position, like an editorial position or a dramaturgical position, and they give you these notes, there's a part of me that's just always, any feedback, I'm always like, yeah, cool, okay, fine, I can make this better. Like, I kind of trust, I trust them more than my own voice sometimes, just they have so much authority when they're like, in certain positions.
And sometimes it's by committee as well. That's what's mad. Sometimes it's a bunch of people. And mad. Yeah, and that's when I think you just, it's a balance like anything else. I think we're saying, like, you can tell when someone's making a mistake when they're saying your name and when they're actually meaning to say the letter A.
But I want to know, Pip, is there things that you do, like this thing that you're working on, if it goes ahead, this filming thing, is there things that you do to get ready for that character, like in your Airbnb before going to the shoot?
It's blown my mind, right? I've found some stuff, because originally all the acting gigs I got, I've had no training or anything else, and that's the reason I was getting them, because I didn't have the same mistakes or the same tone or whatever. But again, I analyse stuff all the time. So I was like, right, this is all good, but I don't want to rest on my laurels. I don't want to just go, well, I'm an actor now, I'm just going to do this. So I got a mate who's an actor I hugely admire to recommend their old act, like an acting teacher. And I went along to these classes and it scared the shit out of me constantly. I felt completely out of place and out of my depth. I genuinely, I'm sure I've said this
because of exercises.
Yeah, it was just stuff that was, it blew my mind. I was finding it fascinating, but I felt hugely out. Yeah, I don't know. There was a shorthand there. Everyone there had obviously had a load of experience in drama schools and stuff like that. So whilst I felt creatively, right, okay, I'm here, I felt out of my depth on a lot of things.
Was it in the UK or was it in the States?
It was in the UK. It was in London. Right, yeah. And it was amazing. It's a guy called James Kemp who's just amazing. He's the people he's taught, from Tom Hardy to Michael Fassbender to Emilia Clarke to all these amazing people.
Serious.
And again, they're all lovely, but I was feeling just intimidated in that first one. And I genuinely...
I
for some reason, I feel I must have told you two this before, because this is exactly the kind of thing I'd message to... You're the people I'd think of to come out of. I'm sitting there, and there was a point where it's like, there's all the practical bit, and at the end, if you want to get up and try out something that you're working on, you can. And I was getting there, and I was like, I was certainly thinking, look, if I don't get up and do something... I'm not going to come back. Do you know what I mean? I'm just going to feel, look, that was too much. I'm out of my depth. And I genuinely, I looked around at the people in the class one by one and thought, end of the day, I reckon I could probably kick the shit out of everyone in here. Like one-on-one. Like there was one guy that I thought might give some problems, but I thought I'd have a good chance with everyone. So what am I scared of? So I got up and did it, and it was terrible. And like, you do your piece, and then the guy goes, right, now how did you feel about that? I was like, mate, I was just trying to get the words out and not shake, because I was genuinely, my hands were going. It's such an alien thing. It's being such a white belt or something. But I was like, my analysis of my performance was literally, I was just trying to get through it at this stage. It was nothing like how I practice it at home and so on and so forth. But yeah, I remember just feeling as I came out, just like, that was the most working class way to get through that ever. Go, who could I beat up? Cool. Fuck it.
Like we've not all done it, man.
And that was amazing. But that class, a lot of it was about movement and analysing movement. So even outside of acting, I learned so much about the things I have as regular movements and what they maybe mean, or things I've done in other acting roles. I go, oh, that's why I've done that for that character, because it's implying this. So... combining that with two people, Tom Hardy before, when we've been out doing stuff, he's played me a playlist he's made for a specific character. And I was watching a BAFTA interview with Samantha Morton, who I just rate hugely, and she was talking about how she has a playlist for every character. So I thought, I'm going to have a bit of that. I'm going to make a playlist for my character. And one of the things in class that I talk about was, take your character out for a walk or take your character out for a drive and see what you learn. And again, I just thought it's more of a study in remaining in character and getting in the mindset. So I made this playlist and I took my character out for a walk.
What does that mean? You went out for a walk?
I went out for a walk as the character. In my mind, right, character. Yeah. And again, I just thought it's that I'm just having to think of it. The amount I learned of what our physicalities are and what they mean and stuff like that. Like the simplest thing, like my character, I won't explain too much about him, but he's quite upright and all this kind of thing, and quite more looking up at stuff rather than I'm quite in my own little world. I'm thinking about stuff. I'm looking at people, but I'm in my own little world. And as soon as I was more upright, I was scanning rooftops, and my guy's ex-military. And it was like, as soon as I was upright, I was learning that part of his intensity is that he's always trying to analyse everything and be like, right, there's no threat there, there's no threat there. And it just made me... I told my brother about this and he recommended a book. Let me find it. it's not an acting book. It's kind of a... I've not even started it yet, but it's on today's list. It's Body and World by Samuel Toads. And apparently it talks about and dispels the myth that we are a brain inside, do you know what I mean? A brain controlled in a body. Because you realise there's so much about your body that is as key to you as anything. Again, it's the myth that we're a brain or a soul, if you want to go religious, that we're a soul inside this shell. And again, I just learnt so much on that walk about the character that it blew me away. Because as I said, I was going out thinking, what I'm going out to do is try and remain in character and try and just get muscle memory as such. But what I actually did was I walked for twice as long as I was expecting, and I was just around the city on a mission and feeling like I'd got so much of a better understanding of this guy. So because of that, I bought some little ear pods so I can have my little playlist if I need to. If I'm feeling I'm not in the character on set or whatever, I can just pop my ear pods in.
Give us a track, man. And I need a track. I need one track. I need one track at least from that playlist.
Let me go to my playlist. I'm gonna.
What do you reckon's on it, Polo?
Nine Inch Nails.
There's no Nine Inch Nails. It's a good shout, though. I might add some Nine Inch Nails. I'll give you three tracks because they're quite different. I've got Guillotine by Death Grips on there.
Yeah.
Because it's just that intensity and that feeling like you're screaming inside, but no one knows outside. And that's what you get like when you walk around the street listening to anything like that. There's all this intensity going on, but no one knows. The little old lady walking past you that doesn't think you listen
she
to
knows.
Madness.
She knows. She knows.
I can see it in your face.
I've got an Ocean Wisdom track on there.
Which one?
Brick or Bat.
Right, okay.
Because I love it, man. And it's that, it bridges that gap between like me growing up listening to Cypress Hill and like, you know, stuff like that and just the current sound. And then just, it's obvious, but tons of Rage Against the Machine. Because my guy, again, without going into loads of detail, he's technically one of the bad guys, but he's not. In my mind, he's a revolutionary. He's fighting for what he thinks should be happening. And few have nailed that as well as Rage Against the Machine. That anger of, here's what we need to do. We can't just go... Like, there's loads of classic, obviously, revolutionary songs, but so many of them are nice and calm and twee. And, like, we need to make a change. Let's make a change. And they're going, like, we're fucking making a change. You come in, because we're leaving now. You can stay here, but we're gone. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, they're a few of my little playlists, but it's good fun, man.
Yeah. It must be exciting.
Yeah.
To just be, like, to have jumped so deep into like new territory and to be finding your way in something that is so exciting, but also so new to you.
Completely. It's really interesting in this because it's a bigger role. So it's the first time I've had like a showrunner who's, we're going back and forth on ideas and like there's stuff that I've had put into the show because I think I've come up with this, like there was a few things in the quarantine that I came up with for the character. I just made a little video and sent it in as like, here's an idea of a character trait or a little thing that he carries with him. And he's like, I love it. Let's put it in. And I've never had that before. Previously, it's always been, man, I'm going to work hours on end on my part, no matter how small it is. Again, Stevie Graham early on has said to me, it's an old quote, but there's no small parts. There's only small actors. So anytime I was like, I've only got a line today, it's like, know your character. Know everything you need to know. And it gave me the outlook, which I've told people loads, but the key to all of it for me, no matter how small your character is realizing that you're the lead in your own world every day. I'm sitting on a bus doing the most mundane shit. I'm the lead. No one else. I'm not a background person. Everyone else is the lead. I'm a background person to that old man's story over there, but I don't know that. Because that's how we are.
When I saw you in the one on the BBC with Tom Hardy.
In Taboo,
Yeah. Every time you said anything, I was reading it back. Like, I was like, oh, that's my mate. I was like, literally like.
I love it.
And you were doing that when, and towards the end of the season, you were like stepping up into the part.
Yeah,
you
man.
Slit someone's throat, that shit.
Yeah. That was some I was good like. Shit.
Yeah, okay. Have you seen the comedy one? What's it called?
Out of Her Mind. It's a
have
BBC
you seen Out of
thing,
Her Mind episode? Watch my right. man in Out of Her Mind, right? The timing is boom. I loved it, mate. I really did love it.
But that's what, again, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, it's what I find fascinating about this industry is it's the exact opposite of what I used to do. Because I used to stand on stage, do something and get instant praise.
Yeah.
Like immediate, instant reaction. Rather than praise, just instant reaction. Whatever I'm doing, it's making them breathe differently or stay silent or whatever else. Whereas this, I kind of love that I get to slave on stuff and no one knows about it. And I'm all right with that, if you know what I mean. Like in music as well, you need to be shouting about everything. It's like, oh, that gig last night was amazing. Tomorrow night we're going to be in Hull and then we're doing this, this, this and this. Whereas in this industry, you kind of, you're not meant to talk about anything for a large portion of it. And I love that. Same with scripts and everything. Like, I've not had any made yet, but I've written like 5 or 6 now. Different things, whether it be a few episodes of a series or a full script for a film that I'm so proud of. And you know that that's part of your journey. And the other person who is sometimes allowed in on our Christmas drinks. I remember one time when Kay couldn't make it and Moosa stepped in. I remember both you and me, Pola, being blown away when he said he'd written, I think it was 8 novels or something that he's never shared with anyone.
Yeah.
So before he'd even put things out. And he saw it all as training. And I now understand that, like, with these scripts. It's like all of these scripts I still love to make, but I know that the one I'm working on now is better because of all these other ones I've written. It's that thing. We've built that society where we go to university and it's about the bit of paper we get at the end rather than everything we learn over those 3 years. It shouldn't be, that bit of paper is irrelevant. It's the 3 years of everything you're taking in rather than I've got this that tells me I'm good.
I want to read Moose's novels, though. Then we need to publish them. What the fuck?
Yeah, they're coming. So, like, he's one a couple of things. Moose is doing all right, man. Moose is doing all right. I mean, he's writing a book about Ian Wright.
Yeah.
Moose hangs out with Ian Wright.
Rocky
now,
boy. That's time, a Rocky boy. That's from my manor.
But he's writing.
His manor.
Yeah, but he's writing the book that comes out in a minute. It's about his experiences at Eton. That comes out. I think that comes out in the new year or whatever, man. He's just on it, and like,
yeah, I love that man.
Yeah, he's cool, man.
I told him he's got to find out if a legendary Millwall Ian Wright story is true, because legend has it Ian Wright had trials for Millwall, and someone didn't turn up that day, so they were a one person short, so he went in goal. So obviously we didn't sign him up, and then he signed for Palace, like up the road. Shortly later, went on to be their top goal scorer, England goal scorer, all of this.
He does a podcast with him every week,
so
he can probably ask him anytime he wants now.
Yeah,
man.
I told him. Wow. I said, I need to find out if that's
wicked.
True.
Wicked.
But yeah, that was massively inspirational to hear him say that, he's done all of this stuff and it's all built towards
what's
doing, right?
Yeah, it's training. That's it. And you have to, like,
I need to pause quickly and say his name is Moosa, Musa Okwonga, Okwonga, because when I've mentioned him before, I've had people go, I can't find Moose, Moose Okwonga. Like, as if someone's got...
Which is his wrestler alter ego.
Yeah, that's a crazy... He needs that alter ego, Moose Okwonga. But because of the way we say it quickly and with love and heart, I need to make that clear. But
check him out. Everybody check him out.
He's a legend.
Sure. Stadio.
Well, shall we start to wrap things up? What's going on?
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to? What's ahead in these confusing times?
You go, Polo, you go.
Me go. What am I looking forward to? I'm looking forward to... Tomorrow I'm going to be making katsu curry.
Yes, mate.
So I'm down with that. I'm down with that. That's always fun. I'm starting a new thing. So I've written a couple of things that, because of everything getting locked down, all got moved. And so, like, a thing that was supposed to come out in May is coming out next June, I think.
Right.
And then I've written another one that will come out the year after, because that's how they work. And so I've kind of just let them go in my head. But I'm starting to write now about one boy's life over 7 years. So scattered between 11 and 18. Wow. But like in a non kind of linear kind of thing. That's what I'm working on at the minute. And I'm just getting to know him and kind of falling for him and figuring it out. So that's what I'm kind of looking forward to in terms of getting that done. And I've been rhyming loads, lad.
Really?
It's been nuts. It's been nuts. I've been listening to a couple of albums. It's got me fully just like, yeah, never going to see the light of day. And
what?
No, it's not. Nah, man, it's not. It's not, because it's more just, it definitely is like the fighting montage and like Karate Kid or something. That's what it feels like. It feels lovely. Just, it's a real hench training scene.
Kay, do you know what I mean? Kay, I feel bad that as soon as I heard Polo had left London, I was like, the next part of his load of stories that he's told, like, because a lot of your spoken word stuff started with, you know, leaving Birmingham, becoming part of London, having that, as we've all touched upon, the kind of hating it a little bit, but more just out of loyalty to where you're from, and then mm-hmm. getting to fall in love with it and becoming part of it. I'm like, the story's continued. I thought it ended in London. The story's continued. We need more. We need a return.
We'll see. I mean, everything's always based in Brom, and it's fun now to be looking around literally at places rather than just in the mind's eye or whatever. So we'll see. Maybe this one will be set in London. I don't know yet.
I'd love that.
Deep.
Your first one you're writing about being in London is once you've left London.
You know what I mean? I'm sure that's there's a cliche somewhere that's got that written on it or whatever. What are you saying, Kay?
Yeah, what you got?
Just before I tell you, I just want to know, like, how are your boys dealing with the moving cities and everything and friends and stuff? Do they feel connected to Brum because obviously you've got family there and you're from there? Or does it feel like to them they're in a new place?
A bit of both, I think. But I think they're such their own people. Do you know what I mean? They're kind of like, they do what they do, and then people come or people don't come. Do you know what I mean? They're both quite philosophical. Like, our oldest is very much in his head and creating stuff all the time and worlds and whatever else. So he's kind of, it takes him a bit longer, but bit by bit now, by laws of attraction, just there's a couple of people just kind of gravitate towards him, as in like, ooh, you're into stuff that's not just what you're wearing or whatever else. He's just into ideas. And our youngest is very much like, he's a chameleon, but in a good way, in a sense that he just kind of looks around and checks who's kind of there and who seems cool. Basically, who's reading the manga? And then bam. And so he's already walking.
Because it's like your arc of going from Brum to London, they're going through the same thing but reverse. They're like,
yeah, kind of.
They've come from London, they're back to Brum. They've got to work out what, yeah.
Exactly. But also, you know, who knows, man? I don't know how long we'll be here, what's going to happen. I've not come back here to like lay down roots or whatever. We just wanted more space.
Yeah.
And wanted to feel what it felt like as a challenge, really.
Yeah.
You know, ironically, like, sparked by the lockdown and stuff. So it's like, right, if we're going to do it, let's do it and see what it feels like. So far, it feels good. But if we feel to go somewhere else in a bit, then we will. It's cool.
That's beautiful, man. That's a beautiful freedom to have.
Yeah, man.
That's so nice.
Come on.
All right. So I'm, because everything is backed up. Yeah. So I wrote a play. A big play for 13 actors.
Oh, wow.
Really big one. It's meant to go on at the National. It's meant to have been and gone, actually. It's meant to open this summer. And it was going on at the Olivier, which is the biggest room in the National. It's like a huge thing.
Yeah.
And obviously that couldn't happen because of COVID. So that's going to happen at some point.
Is this the Miffy one? Is this the Miffy?
Yeah, it's my version. It's like a cover version of a very, very old play, like an ancient play by Sophocles, who is a Greek writer. He's an amazing guy. He was a general in the army, and he wrote this play, which is essentially kind of an anti-war play about this crazy old kind of wounded soldier that gets stranded on an island by his general. In my version of it, it's different. It's been an amazing process. I'm really excited about it. There's a huge chorus of women that live on this island, and there's a lot going on in this play that I hope we get to experiment with. And it's not finished. It's very close to being finished, but
yeah.
Hopefully at some point we'll get to do it, because I'm really excited about it. It's the most exciting thing. Yeah, it's big, you know, it's like a big thing.
Yeah.
Did you guys catch Inua's Barbershop Chronicles?
Yeah.
Fucking amazing, wasn't it? I hadn't seen him in ages, and I'd got pitched him for the podcast. I was like, well, yeah, that's my boy, he's great. And then I went to see it, and I was so blown away by how big it was and how, again, because in the spoken word scene, everyone ends up going, well, I'm gonna do or because of Polar, really, and you, like, I'm going to do a one-man thing, and then I'm going to, it's going to build into theatre and that. So I'd figured it'd be something along them, and I'm like, no, this is a proper...
No, he's not scared of scale, my man. I think Inua thinks massive first. Yeah. Like, he's like... And yeah. It worked. It really worked.
I was shouting. I was gutted I went to see it so late in the run because I was trying to get so many friends and family. Like, you've got to see this. I need to talk about this with more people. It was amazing to be part of. But that's mad.
It's a big mythological thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. And then I'm working. I finished this out. Well, we finished. We've made an album, which is hopefully
going to
come out.
Have you made an album?
Was it an album already on the cards or has it come from this time?
We've been working on it slowly over the last probably year.
Okay.
And then we spent like 2 weeks really, really solidly in it between the two lockdowns. And in those 2 weeks, that's when it just really came into its own. And that's when I did that thing where I recorded the vocal one take. And it's amazing.
Is it a stripped down thing? Is it in your head?
No, so, man.
No, it's
big. it's a big departure from Traps and Lessons, which was the last record. And then I'm working on a new book of poems. That'll be out, I don't know, at some point next year. And I'm like really wrestling with a novel. That's the thing. That's why I asked you for some advice. I'm really struggling with the novel at the minute, but there's lots of things that are bubbling away, and probably when everything turns back on again, I'm hoping that it won't all happen. You know what it's like? Things are meant to have been staggered. We had this plan. Everything was looking nice for the next couple of years. And then hopefully now it won't just happen that we'll get to one point and everyone's putting all the work out at the same time.
You'll figure it, man. You'll figure it, because part of the reason why things end up wrestling with them, I think, is because it's just so you can't do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Your brain is like, no, hold on.
It's mad because with that first lockdown or with the whole pandemic, I just thought, oh, so much time to be creative and do these wonderful things. But I think I was quite productive in that first lockdown, but it was because it had an end date to it.
Yeah.
Whereas as this has rolled on more and more, it's even harder to be productive, I think, because there's no, you don't know when any of this is ending.
Yeah,
or
it's true.
Like, all the days are the same. Weekends aren't a thing anymore.
I find that I've got to take the boot off my own neck for like telling myself that I haven't been productive or whatever, because that mentality is from a different time. Like, things are different now. And like,
hugely.
If you don't get anything done in a day or a week, like, you're just getting through the day or whatever, that's also okay because everything's changed.
I'm massively onto that. I had someone message me, digging me out, or leave a, it might have been message me or left a comment or a review on the podcast, because they were saying Pip just, he goes along with people too much and is he'll just agree, his opinion will change. And it was because of a specific episode. I had Rutger Bregman on, and I've gone on for years, like, when we've talked and stuff like that, about I'll hustle harder than anyone else. I'll work harder. Yeah. Like, one of the reasons me and Sage Francis really hit it off was because we were the only ones replying to emails in December, because the whole music industry just goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And we're like, fucking hustle harder. They've got money. We've got work ethic. Let's get on it. And Rutger Bregman came on and was like, you know, we used to be working towards a 3-day week or a 4-day week, and we used to put value in leisure. And there were all sorts of things, like Kellogg's did this thing as a company in like in the 50s or 60s or 70s or something, where they went down to a 3 or 4 day week and productivity over the week didn't drop at all. Everyone did more and everything was done more, but everyone was happier and more positive and more rested. And that and some conversations.
Is that the guy that wrote Utopia from Realist?
Yeah.
It's
fucking amazing. And again, amazing. That and humankind. Talking to my brother a bit, it really highlighted that kind of, we need to, because I'm exactly the same. Always that kind of, well, what have I written today? Or what have I got done today? Or what have I got done that's productive? Yeah. Rather than, how am I feeling? Like, how's today
been? That's capitalism. Yeah. That's what I was talking about earlier, about you can't expect it to change out there unless you dismantle it in yourself. Yeah. And like that obsession with productivity, that's what we get from the society we're born in.
Yes, his new one is Humankind. Mm. I had him on again. So I've had him on twice. I had him on at the start of this pandemic. And it was amazing because, again, his new book is all about the myth that humans are naturally horrible. Do you know what I mean? The whole Lord of the Flies type myth, that if we're actually left to our own devices. And he just, because the beauty of him being more of a historian than a philosopher or anything is He just goes through history and goes, oh, look.
That's comforting. Here's so proof. Comforting to learn.
Yeah, here's proof.
It's really worth
the reality of it is all wrong. And all the big examples you go to of the Stanford Prison Experiment and all these different ones, it's all like you actually go down, he goes through and gets all the information, goes, oh, no, that's all invalid. It's bullshit. Yeah, that was clearly
completely manipulated.
Yeah, manipulated.
But wait, theories from psychologists.
What were you saying about this comment then? You were like, I was reading through the comments.
Yeah, he was talking about me just going along with stuff. But I think it's a positive thing to change your mind. Because I said it was Rutger that the reason it seemed like I disagree with people is I've spent 4 years on the podcast saying, work hard, guys. Work harder than everyone else. Hustle. I don't sleep. I don't take holidays. And then Rutger was like, you should take holidays. And I'm like, yeah, man, I should take holidays. But it was because it was an eye-opener. The way I'd read half of the book at that point as well. And the way it all breaks it down and shows historical examples just makes you go, man. It's
my only skill, lad.
It's been really relevant in this pandemic as well, because my favourite part in Utopia for Realists is he's talking about the point at which we stop paying good wages to the most important jobs. And again, it's obviously relevant with nurses and everything in this period, but he looks at two different strikes in history. And in the 70s in New York, I've probably got all the dates wrong because everything in history, I just say in the 70s. that's the only time that shit happened. In the 70s,
it's a better time.
It's long enough away for you to believe it, but not too far to make it unrelatable. I think it was in the 70s or 80s in New York, the bin men went on strike. And bin men are kind of looked down upon.
Yeah, like, I know about
who
this.
Would want to become a bin man? It's like, it's the worst job.
The world stopped.
Oh, and the world stopped, yeah. They literally buckled to all their demands within a week because there was disease, smell, everything was just rife. And you realise how important they are. And they're now looked upon as the fourth emergency service in New York because they're like, it's a respected job now. And they get paid well. And then around the same time in Ireland, the bankers went on strike. And they remained on strike for something like 2 months and then just had to come back because people were like, all right, no, fine. See you later. Like, we'll do some back and forth. We'll look after our own money and whatever else. Yet bankers are the one that is this job you want to aspire to and all this and pays a fortune, yet the stuff that we actually need. And we've seen it in lockdown. Like, I'm biased, but having spent 6 or 7 years working in retail, it was awesome that first period of lockdown when people were like, man, these people are our saviours. They're putting themselves at risk and they're staying open so we can get the food that we need and the prescriptions that we need and all this other stuff and the NHS as well. But again, these are two of the lowest paid areas of our societies. But they're the stuff.
But you know what? It's funny because, you know, he talks in that book about the universal basic income and it feels like at this time we're kind of – all these things that just felt impossible because everybody that was in positions of power was so dead set against it. Suddenly everything's changed. Like the balance has just shifted. So all these things that they said were fucking set in stone have just changed.
Yeah. I think
and
part of
potentially
it,
this we're getting closer to a universal basic income. Potentially if every, you know,
part,
this
part of it, I think, is down to, as much as I fucking think social media has done more damage than good, I think we've got more access to people. It doesn't have to go through a politician anymore. So people like Rook can go, here's how a universal basic income would work. Or, again, the best example I did a whole podcast on it. I spoke to two different professors about the defund the police movement, because that's something that, as a sentence, defund the police is easy to go, well, that couldn't work. There'll be chaos. And then when they break it down, that no, it's moving the funding around and making specialist areas – it's essentially demilitarizing the police as much as defunding it. And people can get this information out and understand it more. Whereas previously, it would be easy if the first time you hear about it, like a universal basic income, it's from a politician who's against it, saying, if we want to do that, there'll be all these people sitting on their asses and not contributing, and you'll be paying for them to sit on their asses. But someone like Rook can go, no, here's how it works. It would actually save us money as a nation, because the more of a population that's in poverty, the greater expense and weight it is on the NHS, on all these other things that fuck us up. So I completely agree. I do think we're at a time where we can start to realistically look that these changes are... And what we have to do, though, is start to acknowledge that there's been some fucking amazing changes. in recent times. I know it's easy to focus on the doom and gloom, but we can look and go, there's been really good stuff in recent years for gender, race, also, and we're not finished, obviously, but I think it helps that we acknowledge the stuff that has happened and where we've got to show that we can keep going further.
Yeah, things are moving. Definitely, I feel like the time is ripe for a reckoning. I feel like
the kids feel it, man. The kids feel it. The kids feel it for sure. The kids are like not quite like smirking to themselves behind their hands, but they're kind of, there's a kind of sense of like, yeah, what a mess. Yeah. What a mess. What a mess you made. Can you just move slightly? Come with, we'll chat, blah, but just, now you've got to listen because we're trapped in the same house and you've got to listen to me now.
Yeah.
Mm. Rather than just kind of like telling me to go to bed or whatever. Like, it's like there's something in that kind of energy that I think that they're kind of, and it's, I find it maybe exciting is too strong a word, but the potential of it, I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a wave.
I agree. I love it. Well, let's end it on that positive note.
Yeah.
This has been an absolute joy, man. I need to firstly say I'm down for this whenever, without mics in our hands and without headphones on and recording.
We can save you from your lockdown troubles, though.
Exactly. Whenever anyone's about, hit me up. But yeah, it's been a joy, man, and I'm so glad to have got to.
Oh no, I lost you.
Yeah, to caught up with you. We briefly lost Kay. There we go.
I left, but I'm back now.
I thought we'd literally gone, right, let's round it up there. And you've gone, all right, bye.
All right, see ya.
Yeah, I'm out. Too. But yeah, it's been a damn pleasure. Is there anything either of you need to mention or push that we've not said? No, I'm just the same.
Just thanks, Pip.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to when we can do this in person.
I don't know
when that is. Again, that's one of the key things I think in all of this is everyone can say, I look forward to when things are back to normal. Again, I don't think things should go back to how they were, but I also think it's key to say, but it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't wait to get in whichever dirty pub in, normally like Soho, we normally end up doing this, or somewhere really bizarrely central and expensive for no reason. But I can't wait till we could do that, but it'll come at the right time.
We'll come to Essex next time.
Yeah, damn right. Yeah.
Just come my house and eat some
Come
catsuit.
To Brum. Come to Brum. That's 100%. It. Anytime I'm in Brum, I'm coming around for dinner,
yeah,
mate.
Next time it's Brum.
Come.
Can't wait.
Well, thank you very much. Right, it's been a pleasure. I'll stop. I'll press stop now. There we go.
Deep. Look. Wow, you got the Mad Villain poster. Ah. Yeah.
Do I stop press recording?
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was part two of Christmas Drinks with Kay and Pola. I hope you enjoyed it. I loved it. A lot of you will have realised there's no drunk cast. Normally at the end of the year we do a drunk cast, but because of pandemics and lockdowns and all that, we did numerous drunk casts throughout the year. We had James Acaster on with me and Chris and Stu, and Ed Gamble on, Ramesh Ranganathan, Brett Goldstein, Jade Adams, Rich Wilson, all on for drunk cast. So you can go and enjoy them. I've got something else lined up for you for the next couple of weeks, but I won't tell you too much about that now. I'll let that just come naturally. So don't worry, I'm not missing any episodes. I'll be here every Wednesday as ever. So I'll see you next week. Ta-ta.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.